to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world and all the different stations that carry us. Today, we're going to talk about how sunlight offers surprising benefits. It energizes infection-fighting T cells. This is from Georgetown University Medical Center. How that wonderful hot pepper, cayenne pepper, has a molecule in it that inhibits the growth of breast cancer cells. That's important. And this is from the Center for Genomics in Germany. And how losing body fat could be facilitated by light evening exercise and fasting, Baylor College of Medicine. Three ways that daily meditation can save your life, and a lot more on health and healing. Then a commentary today from Chris Hedges, Fake News in America, Homegrown and Far From New, on TruthDig. A rare look inside what happens to youth who are released from detention centers. When I share this, I'm going to ask for a talkback, where you have an opportunity to share your points of view. We have millions of youth who have been incarcerated for various periods of time. When they're out, they face a lot of obstacles the average person does not face. They're going to look at what are the results of over a number of years following these youth to see how they did. Quote, rare look at youth post-detention is bleak. This is from a Northeastern Medicine. So here is then is the question. What can we individually and collectively do as a society to help facilitate a healthier, more balanced reintroduction back into society, where we're helping the child who had problems so that they don't end up creating the same dynamic that got them incarcerated to begin with? Think for a moment. What would be some really good ideas that we could begin to discuss and see which of those ideas hold merit, and we can then develop them and then start working at local levels all around the United States? Oh, and by the way, there are models for this in other countries. Two of the best countries would be Switzerland and Norway. There they have a radically different approach to people committing crimes and how they do their time. We'll deal with that on that segment. Our talkback number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Also, there's been a question posed for a long time in science. Does aluminum really cause or contribute to Alzheimer's? Well, there's a brand new study that confirms the metal plays a major role in the devastating brain disease. So I'll share the latest on this. It was about 9 years ago that I began a major new book, which is done. Just gave the final approval yesterday to my editor. It's ready. And a film. In fact, yesterday I filmed California. Today I'm also filming right after this broadcast. And over the next couple of weeks, I'll complete the filming. I'm hopeful to have it done within, let's say, the next 3 months, ready for release. 90% of the film is done. What I'm struggling to complete now is, when I started, there were people who thought, yeah, things may get bad, but not in our lifetime. You're looking at 100 to 200, 300 years from now. We may have some increase in sea rise. We may have. Now, we have newer information that shows it's happening now as we speak. And all those people, I went back to them and said, you were so certain that nothing would happen in the near future. Now everything is happening as we speak. And they acknowledged they got it wrong. So I went to another group of scientists who are not afraid to tell the truth. And what they're telling me is, we do not have a long time as a society. The longest anyone gave me was 14 years. The shortest was 9 years before we began to see entire collapses within our planetary systems. Agricultural collapse in different parts of the world, massive migration of people who don't have food to eat. And when you don't have food and you have a family, whatever it takes to feed them, you're going to do that. You're going to have food riots. We've already had food riots. In fact, I have filmed these food riots in 22 countries. But as long as you can walk down the street and see an abundance of food, when you go into a restaurant, you have every possible and imaginable type of regular and exotic food, you just don't connect that as being important. It is. But let me share something today with you, and I'm willing to bet that this is going to happen within the next 12 months. Hope not, but here it is. The melting glacier in Antarctica could raise sea levels by 11 feet. Wow. I'll get to that in our environmental segment. And also, I thought you'd find it interesting that President Trump has most of his cabinet, and they all have something in common. They are all environmental and fossil fuel loving individuals. They deny climate change. They deny our ability to impact climate change, and they see no problem. Why? Why would these people be in denial? Well, I'm going to take you through his major picks and show you what they've made their money from and where their political beliefs are aligned. So those are some of the things we're going to deal with. Plus, today, we're going to have some audio clips I think you're going to find interesting. So let's begin. First up, we need to get sunlight. And sometimes people are so concerned about burning and getting skin cancer that they overprotect their body, and as a result, not enough vitamin D is actually made in the skin in order to maintain your immune system, the health of your heart, your bones, etc. We need about 25 to 40 minutes of sun over about 30% of our body each day in order to make the vitamin D that we need. Now, good sunlight, not to where you burn, actually protects us against, let's say, skin cancer. But this is the latest from Georgetown University Medical Center. It's a very important study. It says, sunlight allows us to make vitamin D, credited with healthier living. But a surprise research finding could reveal another powerful benefit for getting some sun. Georgetown University Medical Center researchers have found that sunlight, through a mechanism separate than vitamin D production, energizes T cells that play a role that is central in our human immunity. Their findings, published in scientific reports, suggest how the sun impacting on the skin, and then that impacting upon, as the body's largest organ, impacts in upon the many microbes that can rest there. And, quote, we all know sunlight provides vitamin D, which is suggested to have an impact upon immunity, among other things. But what we found is a completely separate role of sunlight on immunity. It says that it goes in there and stimulates our T cells. Wow, that's important. Why? Because, quote, T cells, whether they are helper or killer, needed to move in their work, and this sunlight helps them keep infections and other body responses at bay. So they're a great defense mechanism. And so when you're getting your sun, you're actually helping your immune system. That's the takeaway message. Now, another study from the Centers for Genomics in Germany shows that capsaicin, CAP, Sai, S-A-I, Sin, C-I-N, capsaicin, which is a molecule found in red hot pepper, inhibits breast cancer cells. That's important. Quote from the study. Capsaicin, an active ingredient, a pungent substance such as chili or pepper, inhibits the growth of breast cancer cells. This was reported by a team headed by biochemists at the center and published in the journal Breast Cancer, Targets and Therapy. And then the study goes on to explain how it works. Now, as many of you know, the reason that I suggest every day, twice a day, or sometimes three times a day, the capsules, high heat index capsules, generally taken with a smoothie, is because it thins the blood. It is phenomenal at thinning the blood, helping prevent strokes. It also helps heal inflammation in the body. It's great for ulcers and especially inflammation in our joints. So it's a great anti-stroke, anti-heart attack nutrient. Now we can add in there an entirely new reason for using it. It helps prevent breast cancer. From Baylor College of Medicine, they're saying making muscles burn more fat and less glucose, which is your blood sugar, can increase exercise endurance and simultaneously help prevent diabetes. So when you're exercising in the evening in particular, and you're fasting, let's say you have liquid food like juices, smoothies, you're losing weight and you're helping your muscles, both. And that's a good thing. So why not break up your exercise into two? Do 45 minutes in the morning, aerobic, cardio, and then the same thing in the evening. Early evening means anywhere between 4 and 8 p.m. And that way it gives your body a chance to normalize its metabolism. It'll kill your appetite. And the best thing to do after exercising have a nice glass of electrolyte rebalancing nutrients. Good would be coconut water, watermelon juice, beet juice. Those are all terrific. And a low-carb diet alleviates inherited form of intellectual disability in this study from Johns Hopkins University. I'll quote this. Experimenting on mice with a genetic change similar to that found in people with a rare inherited disease called Kabuki syndrome, Johns Hopkins scientists report that a very low carbohydrate diet can open up DNA and improve mental function. Okay. So it also increases memory and it increases intellectual capacity. So let's look at the opposite of this. Let's look at what most people consume most days. They consume a high-protein, high-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. The carbs are not healthy. The carbs are empty carbs, potato chips, french fries, bagels, buns, sandwich spread. This is all carbohydrate. Candies, desserts, carbohydrate. So when you reverse that and you go to a lower protein, which you're going to get in a plant-based diet, but a good quality protein, you're not overtaxing the kidneys and the liver. You're going to have clearer thinking because you're not going to have ammonium circulating in your blood when you're trying to break down protein. There's no mechanism for storing protein. So you go through a process called decatalyzation, which is breaking down the amino acids and the nitrogen to get it out of the system. The kidneys and the liver have to do that. So every time you eat something more than what your body needs, you're taxing your body, you're taxing your kidneys, your liver, and you're creating toxins in the blood that go to the brain. How much is too much? Well, if you do the simple math, it's 9/10 of a gram per kilogram of body weight per day. Lay language. For most women, depending upon your activity, whether you're pregnant, nursing, recovering from surgery or trauma, anywhere from 40 to 60 grams of protein a day. Men, it's anywhere from, depending upon your age, your muscle mass, It's in weight, it's anywhere between 50 to 80 grams of protein a day. Okay, then let's look at what most Americans would consume. For example, yesterday I went through all the channels to see what they were offering on their food selection. Not a single one could I find that was, in my personal opinion, healthy. My personal opinion, they all contribute to disease, which can lead to death. So I call these the death channels, the death shows. Now, you can put a smiling face on it. You know, if you were going to be shot by a firing squad and you decide you didn't want a blindfold, and but all of the people came out and you found out they were all comedians. So before they all shot you, they would try to make you laugh. And so you were being shot just after you found maybe some humor in the people about to execute you. That's how we market things in America. As long as we like the presentation, we don't really pay a whole lot of attention to the consequences. We like a politician, you can have sex with 3,721 women, and you won't be held accountable for that. That's the way it works. That's our kind of strange perception of reality. So I look at these shows, in my personal opinion, these are the smiling, charming, or intense executioners, because at the end of the day, your heart attack, your breast cancer, could be due to the very foods that you've been consuming without thinking, gee whiz, what is the fact? So when you're eating a steak, and I was watching this one guy, this is Southern food. Now, my family comes from the South. North Carolina, that's South. And Kentucky, that's South. Virginia, that's South. And the furthest north I ever knew any of my family lived was in West Virginia. That's still South. And there are certain traditions, depending upon where you live in the South, about what you eat. And there is no healthy diet in the South. It just doesn't exist. It's never existed. I've studied the diet very carefully, going state to state, at every level. Now, the fact that you may make a presentation that looks gourmet doesn't mean that what you're presenting as gourmet is really good. I have no idea why anybody watches Anthony Bourdain. I just really don't. I find the man just like he hasn't had a bowel movement in 7 months. So he's going to take it out on people watching by showing how condescending, nasty, bitchy face he can be. That's my own personal opinion. You may find it completely different. He's popular, so obviously a lot of people don't mind. And there he is in one of these shows yesterday or day before, and he and this Buddhist guy who just saw this Buddhist temple, they're at the top of this place, and they're eating deep-fried bunny brains. And, oh, you got to watch because, you know, the teeth are still there. So you pull back the skin, and there you, and then you hear them slurping in the brains of this little bunny. What was your pet bunny? Do you have any concept? Are you that disconnected from everything spiritual that you're willing just to say, this has no life force? This is not a sentient being. Let's change it. Let's ask Mr. Bourdain. Let's ask all the other chefs, every one of them, why don't they show us how much they love the taste of animal flesh by going on and eating their dog, their cat, their bird, or their goldfish, and see if they can slurp up the brains and find just as delectable as any other creature they would eat. Just the desensitizing of a person to the quality of life means I wouldn't trust that person for any reason. Because when you no longer find life sacred, then you're living a completely socially constructed lie. Because you're always going to have those that have value and everything else that does not. And what doesn't have value? You're Muslim, you don't have value. You're black, you don't have value. You're not successful, you don't have value. You are the same class, same ethnicity, same religion, but you're at the lower end. You don't have the same value as someone else. And how we have managed in our society to slice and dice everyone and put them in tiny little compartments of relative value is just amazing to me. So just remember that. Because my new film and my new book, which is a big book and a big film, really strips away what's going on inside of people who've lost their sense of understanding the value of life. I decided to do a book that is raw, not existential, raw, pure truth, with nothing given to anesthetize the image. So when I see these people on television, I see what they're doing without any thought that, gee whiz, did they ever think that maybe something other than their own dog or cat has feelings and emotions? And then I have to ask, if you lie to one person, you don't lie to another, are you a liar? If you could steal from one person, not steal from another, are you a thief? If you could betray one person, not another, are you a betrayer? And we like to dance around this as if somehow that's an easy answer, Gary. Of course we're not liars, thieves. We have friends, we have family, look at us, and I'll show you the good Nazis who could make the same argument, or the good Maoists who could make the same argument, or the good Stalinists who could make the same argument, and people in every belief, the good Democrats who could make the good argument. Just think of how many people are dead today who were rendered, tortured, droned to death, how many people starved to death, how many kids, 500,000 erect, died. This is according to Reynard Loki of Alternet, Mike Pence, Vice President, Indiana Governor. And during his time in the House of Representatives, Pence consistently voted against any legislation designed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, including a carbon cap and trade bill. And he believed that the EPA should not regulate emissions. Let the industry do it. Doesn't believe in global warming. Ryan Zinke, Secretary of Interior. That's an important position. He's a staunch supporter of the fossil fuel industry, and he is probably the single most anti-environmental lawmaker in Washington, D.C. So now one of the most important persons to protect the environment, not to allow its resources, national parks, rivers, streams, grasslands, to be exploited, you bring in a man who will be completely privatizing everything, exploiting everything, because he doesn't believe that there's a thing wrong with anything that corporations have done to the environment or could do. That's your Secretary of Interior. Wilbur Ross, Secretary of Commerce. Interesting, because all the people who are the billionaires made their money exploiting people. So here's the hat trick. How can you exploit people, make all your money off their misery, their loss, and now you're supposed to completely turn it around and help them, find them housing that's affordable, quality of work? I don't think so. On the campaign trail, Donald Trump made big promises to coal miners, many who have lost their jobs as the industry collapses. But his comment to out-of-workers, the miners, has faltered because he picked Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, a New York billionaire who owned the now-defunct Sago Mine in West Virginia, where 12 miners were killed, and he showed no remorse. Ross made his fortune restructuring distressed companies, meaning strip off the assets, throw everyone out. He did this with steel, textiles, coal, and telecommunications. So he is the big person in government who causes people to lose their work, and you made him responsible for people having work? Rick Perry. Rick's kind of a sorry sack of a human being, isn't he? Not sure who he is. But now he's Secretary of Energy. Well, now there's an unimportant position, right? Someone who oversees our entire nuclear arsenal, nuclear development, who is a climate change denier. So that ought to go well. Wow. And let's talk with Rick about what does he know about wave power and geothermal. And he'll ask you first to spell it, and then in big letters, and put it on a cardboard so you can see it. Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State. He ran ExxonMobil, the world's largest publicly traded international oil and gas company, for more than 40 years, and which makes him one of the major polluters in the world. And So he doesn't believe in global warming. So that's who you're having run there. And then you've got everything you're doing against helping the environment and the people impacted by the environment. And they're the ones who are now overseeing the environment. The head of the new EPA chief is one of the biggest environmental deniers on history. So then you have to ask, what is the likely outcome? And the answer is relatively simple. When a system is so corrupt that it cannot possibly be changed from inside, then the only other thing that is possible is work on alternative solutions at a local level that are not controlled or influenced by national politics, so you can start the reseeding of a new paradigm, new projects, new energy, optimistic, because sooner rather than later, based upon environmental disasters that will be happening and the crushing of all dissent, the censoring of any alternative media, starting with the 200 sites that have already been listed under a McCarthy-like list that was published in the Washington Post recently. These are the sites that promote fake news. No, those are the sites that expose fake news, including the Washington Post and the New York Times. Then you come in with the ultra-authoritarian rule. And then you arrest, detain, harass, or in effect, destroy anyone that challenges the corporatocracy. But all these systems don't look at the outcome. And the outcome is, you don't have to worry about any angry progressives. They're putting their energy into something constructive. Angry liberal Democrats, you're just going to really anger 63 million of your voters, and they're the ones who are going to bring you down. And I see that happening sooner rather than later. Now, one more issue here, and that is the melting glacier. In my research and filming, I've seen this curve going from it's not a major issue clear over to where it is out of control, where things, well, we only have 7 tipping points, then 11 tipping points, and 14 tipping points, now 31 tipping points. Half of those are either tipped, can never be reversed, or are about to tip. And the average person couldn't name you one. And by the way, you'll see in the film where I go to major college campuses and ask graduates who's a professor, name me the 31 tipping points. I couldn't get one person in one university to name me one. So here's the latest. The Earth's climate, it seems, isn't listening to the politicians that are insisting it's not warming. The temperature continues to rise internationally, and the globe, especially the large glaciers and giant vaults of stored water, continue to melt, releasing more to the oceans. The global sea level and the thermal expansion of glacial melting continues to be building up to a head of steam, like a man just beginning the descent down a steep hill. Greenland's Hawking Glacier and the Arctic Sea are now marked by their rapid melting. By the way, how rapid? As of today, the melting of Greenland is now 500% faster than what anyone predicted just 2 years ago. So you're now caught into a feedback loop where no one can accurately predict when major amounts of glaciers will calve. But it's happening and will continue to. They also found inside of glaciers, lakes, huge lakes, some lakes as large as any lake in America. And when that top cap of ice that's protecting it melts to the lake, all that water is going to pour out. But then you have this big thing down in Antarctica. I guess it was about 5 or 6 years ago that they said the Larsen B shelf would be breaking off in about 100 years. It broke off 9 days later. Now there's what's called the Larsen C shelf. The Larsen C, as in ABC, It is 70 miles long, 3/4 of a mile thick, and 300 yards wide. You can see this from satellites, even airplanes. It's going to break soon. Here's what's bad about that. This could cause an increase of up to 11 feet of flooding in some areas, according to the latest research. That's a huge amount of water. That would be the largest single breakage and release of water in history. That's almost unfathomable. And when that happens, it'll happen overnight. One day, we won't think about it. The next day, it'll be there. So that's coming at us. I'm just giving you the heads up, not to be a doomsayer or Cassandra, but rather simply to say, reasonable people look at problems and seek solutions. Reasonable solutions take into account cause and effect, likely outcomes, worst-case scenario outcomes, best-case scenario outcomes. And then you try to create a curve that would include starting with the best outcome and going to the worst, and what you have to do and what timetable to get people aware of it so you can at least prepare for it. That's reasonable. When we thought we had 100 years or longer, no one thought it was important. Today we realize we don't have 100 years. Ask the people of Louisiana how they feel when 90% of the people in the entire state had damage to their homes, didn't have flood insurance, and now with winter are living in makeshift environment and didn't have insurance either. Ask the people who were flooded for the first time in areas of West Virginia, Wisconsin. Ask the people who never had a major fire in Tennessee and in Kentucky just weeks ago, 36,000 fires. Ask the people who have actually been impacted. Did that get your attention yet? Here's a takeaway message. In my research, my counseling over many years, decades, I've come to the decision that 90 to 95% of the people will not change no matter what the outcome portends. 5 to 10% people are actively trying to improve the quality of their lives, becoming aware, educated, and that's good for them. That means that the only reason and the only time most people are even made aware of a crisis is when it's personal and impacts them. But even then, heart attacks, strokes, cancers, bankruptcies, divorces, imprisonment will get people's attention. It doesn't mean that they are still going to change. That's unfortunate. Many people don't have to have a crisis before they change. They want to change. They want a better quality of life. So they're not afraid to look outside their existing belief system for new information. And that's good. Now, here's my question. I'd like to see who in the audience has an answer. When we look inside the youth detention centers, the youth prisons, according to this Northeastern Medicine Review, we see a very bleak outcome. They looked at all types of detention centers over 12 years and what caused people to get into jail, what they did when they were out of jail, what they did over a period of 12 years. And very little went well for them outside of that. So here's my question. Please address it. What do you suggest as a series of positive solutions? We're focusing upon the solution now. What can we do to help these individuals so that they're more likely to have a one-way ticket out and not come back? That the quality of their life can improve and society is there as we should be to offer them some assistance so that they can reassimilate to their families and begin to have a life of meaning and purpose. Our number is 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Your love I'll keep forever. Nice to have you with us, everyone. And by the way, we had a wonderful time last night in this webinar I did where we had a whole lot of people watch a documentary, a new documentary. But then I addressed their personal questions on depression, anxiety, and loneliness. Here's something that rather surprised me. 95% of the people who tuned in were men, and an awful lot of young men. So from all over, they called in and I addressed the issues. So we spent about an hour and a half talking and sharing insights. So I'll let you know when I'm back from my next trip, which will be a little extensive one, helping some refugees, and I'll do another one. All right, and we're going to listen for some solutions here in a moment. But listen to this, because it's rare that we have someone put it on the line, tell the truth about how corrupt and bankrupt our banking system is. I've said it many times. The best thing that could happen to America, to the world, is the entire global banking cabal in Washington and in New York go bankrupt, meaning go through structured bankruptcy and put all those people who ran these companies out of business. Let the people who stupidly and greedily invested in them, let them take the loss. And then re-energize the Treasury to give zero interest loans, to absolutely forgive all that interest debt because it's owed to banks who were corrupt to begin with, and restructure all of our debt and no longer allow payday loans, no longer allow interest of more than 1% on anything, and no longer give any subsidy or bailout to any major corporation. If you're mismanaged and you fail, go out of business and allow the marketplace, if you truly believe in the marketplace, but oh, I forgot, you hate socialism, but you thrive on it. But you just hate it when smaller people are given some ability to exist with food stamps. You don't want them to have food stamps. You don't want to have affordable housing. You don't want them to have free education, but you want to make billions of dollars, pay no tax on it, game the system, and then get hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies each year. The entire system is corrupt. That whole system needs to go out of business so a new system can take its place. One has to completely break down before another one can break through. Here's someone who has an idea. Please listen.
It is my opinion that you do not really understand the concept of banking. All the banks are broke. Bank Santander, Deutsche Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, they're all broke. And why are they broke? It isn't an act of God. It isn't some sort of tsunami. They're broke because we have a system called fractional reserve banking, which means that banks can lend money that they don't actually have. It's a criminal scandal, and it's been going on for too long. To add to that problem, you have moral hazard, a very significant moral hazard from the political sphere. And most of the problem starts in politics and central banks, which are part of the same political system. We have counterfeiting, sometimes called quantitative easing, but counterfeiting by any other name. The artificial printing of money, which if any ordinary person did, they'd go to prison for a very long time. And yet governments and central banks do it all the time. Central banks repress the amount of interest that rates are, so we don't have the real cost of money. And yet we blame the real retail banks for manipulating LIBOR. The sheer effrontery of this is quite astonishing. It's central banks. It's central banks that manipulate interest rates, Commissioner. And plus, underneath all this, we talk loosely, in a rather cavalier fashion, do we not, about deposit guarantees. So when banks go broke through their own incompetence and chicanery, the taxpayer picks up the tab. It's theft from the taxpayer. And until we start sending bankers, and I include central bankers and politicians, to prison for this outrage, it will continue.
All right. You won't hear that in the United States. We should put all the bankers in prison who were part of the corruption that led to, and self-interest and illegal dealing that led to the crash. Instead, we bailed them all out. They all got richer. They consolidated all their gains. They were able to wash all their bad assets out by the Federal Reserve, and we didn't get anything except home foreclosures and suffering and greater debt. Explain the logic of that to me. Let's take a call from a reverend from New York. Hi, what's your name, please?
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Minister Peterson.
All right. And what is your solution, please?
Well, what I found, I'm a nurse also, and I'm also an ordained minister. And for over 33 years, I've had nursing experience. And I'm going to tell you, the one thing that I find that will bring a solution is, first of all, to recognize the humanity of these juveniles, okay, and not judge them or prejudge them for where they've come from or what crimes they have committed, if any, whatever the case might be, because there's no such thing as a bad child. There's a bad parenting system that fails these children, and then they criminalize them if they rebel against the system that failed them in the first place. The majority, if not all of them, are from foster care, and they have been either molested, sexually violated, you know, abused verbally, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, whatever. Anyhow, in addition to recognizing their humanity, then you let them know that, as I do, that they are creations of the Most High, and that being that they have, that there's a plan, a divine plan for them, and that the divine plan includes their creative, intrinsic ingenuity and genius and creativity, and that their contribution would make a difference to the world, and that they are the masters of their own destiny, and they can more or less change their fate, okay, and their destiny as well. So basically, we have to show them love. We have to teach them that they are divine creations and that they do have the power to change their lives, and produce them or present them with the solutions. I'm nervous, excuse me. Solutions such as job training and personal communication skills and critical analysis and civics and so forth and so on.
All good thoughts. Thank you very much, Minister. I appreciate you calling and sharing those with us. I might add this thought to that. All of that is good. Absolutely right on. But when someone comes out of prison, and I used to go into the prison system, like the Queen's House of Detention, and work with the inmates who are about to be released to try to prepare them for a better mindset, develop the tools they need, and more often than not, they didn't know where to get those tools. What if in every community in America where there is any incarcerated person, we also take a building or a block that is no longer viable by any means, that is, let's say it's been relegated to dangerous, we level that and we build a reintroduction center, not a halfway house, because a person is there of free will. But they can learn skills and crafts. They get the type of counseling to help them with any of the post-traumatic stress experience that they may have encountered in jail. They're given an opportunity to have people there who are experienced, who come from a humanistic background, to help them develop the language skills, to help them get back into an educational system they may have been out of or neglected. Also, vocational skills, wood shop, ironworking, electrical, all the different trades that they could learn, and then have the unions also participating in both offering instruction in classes, but also opportunities for the future to journey into some of these trades that they otherwise would be denied if they didn't have any background. And then also have gardening, have a place where if you've been in a gang, how you could get out of gangs, and have people negotiate on your behalf for the issues in life that you're not qualified for because they don't have the life experience and frequently don't have the communication. What if we had advocates, professional retired people who had the skills, knowledge to advocate on their behalf? then I believe that we would have a much higher rate of success. They would have a healthier mind and body. They would have a support system that was professional and behind them. Someone would really have their back. And they also could have entrepreneurship, how you start your own business, have people have microloans of 1%, as they did in India successfully initially, to get them started. I'm sure that there's, as you're right, Minister, there's a lot of very talented people who simply need an opportunity. So we should be able to provide that opportunity for people. And then also I believe that they should have, if they stay out of trouble for 2 years, their entire record should be expunged. So they no longer have any of that hanging over them that could be on a resume or work application that could limit them or bias them in the future. They should also have regular meetings, support meetings, with people who are there not to judge them, as you say, but to encourage them and to help them with the solutions so they don't feel desperate, they don't feel helpless, and think of all the people in America that could contribute to that. First, just in building these places and staffing them, you're talking about probably 1 million to 2 million new jobs. You're talking about de-ghettoizing communities. You're talking about helping people who are not given help in our society. Those are some additional ideas. And finally, this evening at 7 o'clock, I'll be doing a one-hour special on fake news, specifically on Syria and Aleppo, and showing you through many different people how everything we've been told about this, from the white helmets being these wonderful people instead of what many are calling them terrorists in disguise, to how hundreds of millions of dollars a year are spent keeping us misinformed. It's going to be a special you won't want to miss. Powerful. 7 p.m. PRN.FM. But the media today, and we're talking about the vast majority of media, it's a landscape that is dominated by fake news. And it has been, according to Chris Hedges, for decades. Now, this fake news does not emanate from the Kremlin. It is a multi-billion dollar a year industry that is skillfully designed and managed by public relations agencies and publicists and communication departments on behalf of individuals and governments and corporations to manipulate public opinion. This propaganda industry stages pseudo events to shape our perception of reality. The public is so awash in these lies delivered to us 24 hours a day through the electronic devices and print that viewers and readers can no longer distinguish between truth and fiction. Donald Trump and the racist conspiracy theorist and generals and billionaires around him inherited and exploited this condition, just as they have inherited and will exploit the destruction of civil liberties and the collapse of democratic institutions. Trump did not create this political, moral, and intellectual vacuum. It created him. It created a world where fact is interchangeable with opinion, where celebrities have huge megaphones simply because they are celebrities, where information must be entertaining and where we can all behave in ways that are irresponsible. We can believe what we want and leave everything alone, including the truth. A demagogue like Trump is what you get when you turn culture and the press into burlesque. Journalists long ago gave up trying to describe in objective ways in a world that is subjective. They tried to give a voice to ordinary men and women, and then they stopped. They became conditioned to this kind of inner corporate demand, meaning news personalities who often make millions of dollars a year become courtiers. They peddle gossip. They promote consumerism and imperialism. They chatter endlessly about all of the things that we do, strategies and polls and presentations and tactics, or play guessing games about the upcoming presidential requirements. They fill news holes with trivial, emotionally driven stories that make us feel good about ourselves. They are incapable of genuine reporting. They rely upon professional propagandists to frame all, every single discussion and debate. They are established journalists who have spent their entire careers repackaging press releases or attending official briefings or press conferences. And that's how it is today. So what does this portend? It portends that we, the people, must understand what is truth and what is fiction. We must understand, including in the alternative media, how we have been used and played based solely upon our inability to recognize that our ideology and the ideologues and policymakers in that ideology are using us, whether you're conservative or liberal or anything in between. We must begin the process of questioning everything and everyone. When we do that, then one day I believe that we'll start to see what the truth is and what it is not. When a public loses trust in its institutions, the persons within those institutions, the offices, the people in the offices, then they pull away. And frequently they pull away to a place of a pain, of hurt, of betrayal. At a time when we need tens of millions of people to become proactive at the local level, to organize, to work together, without bureaucracies, without mind-numbing local committees and groups that do nothing constructive except argue with each other over parliamentary rules, we need those highly committed people to step forward and say, I got an idea. And we'll say, what is it? And you say, I know a better way for us to deal with the environment, environmental issues. If we know they're going in one direction as a entity, why don't we take each of those things that they're going to defend and show where they're indefensible? We can take nuclear power and show everything wrong with it. We have Harvey Wasserman. We have the people who are experts in the field, Michio Kaku, Helen Caldicott. We can do the same thing with genetic engineering and our food. We can do the same thing with a meat-based diet and the destruction that factory farming has caused upon our land and our health. We do not lack the experts, the scripts, the dialogue, the talking points, the documentaries, the books, the articles. We have it. Now why don't we use that to show the truth? And we may seem like weak voices, but we are not weak over the internet. We are multitudes. We're in the tens of millions. The media just tends not to pay attention or believe that we exist. We do. So therefore, we can go directly to the American people. We can and we must. And share our insights with them. And we will. So I do not intend to spend one moment of my time trying to destroy Trump. I see him as a colossal ass. All of his kids, everyone around him. They're fully capable of all being mini Neros. Read your history to see how that turned out. What we should do is, now that a system is imploding, both the environment, the governments, our institutions, why don't we spend some time rebuilding without them? We don't need them. You're never going to change any of their institutions. You're never going to reform completely corrupt paradigms and the people in them. It's not going to happen. No matter what Bernie Sanders, who betrayed so many people, believe. Those people are now waking up and realizing what they can do positively If in a given day you can only put your energy into one or two places, either believing and supporting fake news or looking for the truth and acting on it in a constructive way with solutions, isn't your time and energy in the future better spent showing solutions to the problems that they're going to continue to deny or perpetrate? We are many. We are not a few. And we do have a mission. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.